And a big aloha welcome to Talk Story, the longest running talk show on Maui. And today it's the hottest talk show on Maui. The air conditioner went out here, and it happens to be outside today. Just killer, killer hot. This is one of the warmer days out there, so we're kind of just in here going, actually the doors are open. A little fan that we found in the attic is, Jack took WD-40 and revived it, and we plugged it in. And so if we sound a little loopy, it's because it's hot. Anyway, I'm glad to be here with one of my favorite people, Robert Pollock, who has been doing ebb and flow arts for so many years, to be exact.
How 17 many? Years. Thank you, Cindy.
17 wonderful years. And the thing that amazes so many people is the fact that you have done all of these concerts for free.
Yeah, that's right. And we have the sponsors, the private foundations. In this case, the event we'll discuss, the Piano Synergy Festival, it's the Makana Aloha Foundation.
Ah.
And a new one, the Earl Brown Music Foundation. You probably recognize the name from one of the composers. There's a foundation that supports the performance of his music.
Well, I just think it's great that you stay on top of these things to know how to even do it. Some people can't. I couldn't even know how to write a grant, truthfully. So I think it's pretty amazing that you know how to do it, find it, and then get it.
AHS Foundation, the Aaron Copland Foundation.
Wow.
Aaron Copland Fund for Music.
Wow.
Roger Shapiro Fund for New Music. Kasasa Foundation, ABC Stores.
Do they ever come, any of these people from the funding, do they ever come out and see a show?
They do.
How nice.
Absolutely.
Wow. Yeah. So I bet they're impressed when they do.
Yeah. You know, they continue to fund us. We certainly send them recordings if they can't be on island.
You know,
many of them are on the mainland, these foundations. Mm-hmm. The Edward T. Cohn Foundations, for instance, based partly in New York City and New Jersey. The Aaron Copland Fund for Music is in then we have John R. Halligan Charitable Fund that's in Chicago. So a lot of these are mainland-based, and therefore the trustees don't get out here too often. But we send them the recordings.
And you do a great job. This coming Friday is going to be another fantastic show happening upcountry at the beautiful Seabury Hall. And it's going to be, if you want to go, and I highly recommend going to the discussion, that's going to be at 6:30, and that goes for about an hour. And that's very interesting for people. And then the show starts at 7:30. And I was just laughing before we began the show. Is that the air conditioner coming on? Oh, my gosh. Oh. A blessing. I think I heard an air conditioner trying to come on for a second.
I felt cooler.
For 1 second, yes. They're doing a test on it, I think. But anyway, what you've got is an amazing line. Did you get the air conditioner working? No. Almost. Oh, too bad. Amazing lineup of people I can't pronounce with music I can't pronounce, and I was trying to before the beginning, but I said you're going to have to help me on this.
Sure.
So can you give me the lineup, Robert?
Well, there are actually two concerts that comprise the Piano Synergy Festival, and it's a kind of a culminating event for us over the 17 years in many ways. The first concert is Friday night at Seabury Hall, as you mentioned, 7:30 p.m. at the new Performing Arts Creative Arts Center, which is a beautiful facility. If any of you have never been, you know that this is a good opportunity. It is free admission. So this will be strictly pieces written for two pianos that simultaneously playing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some of you remember Ferrante and Teicher or, you know,
gosh,
the duo pianists.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And there are many, many duo piano teams.
Yeah.
You know, but in this case, the repertoire is different from what you usually hear with two pianos.
Are you one of the pianists?
I am participating as pianist in this festival, absolutely, and having a very good time, for example, working with a very familiar name, I think, for some people here, of Adam Tendler, the pianist. He's been here three times before, starting in 2005.
Mm-hmm. And he hasn't moved here yet.
No, he likes it here, but.
I mean, you can't confuse him with Adam Sandler. You know, it sounds
like
he's Adam Tendler.
Talking about difficulties with the language, these word processing programs have a built-in correction.
Yes, they
every
do.
Time I would write Tendler, it changed it to Tender.
I get some very interesting changes, especially with Hawaiian names and stuff.
Yeah.
Imagine. But Adam's going to actually call in here in about 10 minutes,
yes,
too.
Yes, yeah. He's a wonderful pianist. He's sort of given legendary performances here. The second one was of Sonatas and Interludes for Prepared Piano by John Cage. And Adam told me this is one of the most bootlegged recordings around.
Well, John Cage is very famous in it, underground hero.
That's right. But this particular performance of this major work of his, which was done here on Maui.
Really?
Yeah.
And it gets bootlegged.
Oh, yeah.
Well, there you go.
No, you're not Jerry Garcia.
You're not the great. It's amazing that the people are bootlegging this stuff, you know?
No, because he's a phenomenal. He came out here three times and performed these huge works, you know, hour long for memory.
Wow.
This is just a brilliant fellow. So he's back, and this time working more, for example, with me and ensemble pieces and another pianist from New York, Joan Forsythe, who's arriving tonight with her husband, William Anderson, the guitarist. Then we'll have Iggy Jang here on Sunday.
Iggy, let's just back up because I didn't know this, and maybe some people out there don't know this. Tell us who Iggy is.
Iggy Jang is the concertmaster of the Hawaii Symphony. And he's been there for many years.
All right.
And he also was a founding member of our group, Ebb and Flow Ensemble, in 2001.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And we remain, you know, cooperation. So he's going to be here Sunday playing a piece he just recorded for us, as a matter of fact, by Claude Balif, his Solfeggetto Number 3. So it's a solo violin piece. Very interesting composer whom I met many years ago, and Iggy met independently of that in a competition. As a teenager, he was required to play that piece to the composer's satisfaction. Now, he never played it until we learned of it, maybe 5-6 years, he brought it back.
Did you request it?
Yeah, yeah. Of course, because I had met Balif independently in the late 70s. Very interesting composer.
Probably not here.
No, it was in New York? Jersey.
New Jersey.
A colleague of his who lived in New York asked me to set up a lecture for him. He was traveling. So at that time, I was teaching at Kane College of New Jersey, and I set up a lecture for him.
It's a professor in you.
Yeah, I did some of that. Yes, absolutely.
Wow.
And it was a very interesting, very heavy French accent, of course.
Nice.
But I still remember things he said. He talked about, the only time I've ever heard it, the aroma of the sound.
I like that. That would be a great name for a CD.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it? You know, the aroma of the sound. I like that.
And he talked, oh.
Air.
Speaking of aroma, this oxygen.
Nice.
The aroma of.
The aroma of WD-40 is kind of surrounding you because the fan has WD-40, and I smell just, and I, you know, I'm going, whoa, WD-40 is intense. But the aroma of the sound is not WD-40.
No, the aroma of the sound.
The aroma of the sound would be what? What would you call the aroma? What would the aroma of the sound be?
Somehow you feel that it's characteristic, perhaps, of some of the French appreciation for the senses, and but also the aroma of the sound. It's a synesthetic notion, you know.
Oh, I like that word. Crossing senses,
right?
Synesthetic?
Yeah.
Synesthetic. That's a beautiful word.
Synesthesia.
So
it's some, you know, just focus on it, and probably the aroma will come to you. We tried it. Iggy played for Kihei Elementary School children.
Really?
Third graders.
Uh-huh.
A little earlier this year. An introduction to violin for them. And I asked him to play a bit of this piece because it was he just recorded. Now, this is a very abstract, freely dissonant piece that written in his own system and all the rest. So not a familiar, you know, kind of thing. And then at one point, Iggy said, because he knew of this, he said, what do you think the aroma of this piece is? And after he played it, the children said things like, lemongrass.
Oh, my gosh, how amazing.
And lemons. Yeah.
Because it is kind of cutting edge. The lemons kind of give you the...
Well, there was something... I don't know...
There is something unique about the smell of lemons.
And the aroma of lemons, I think. Yeah. And actually, it's very healing, lemon.
When I think of the aroma of lemons, I think of limoncello. I think of Naples and down the coast of Italy. You know, as you go down there, there's lemons everywhere. There's so many lemons along southern Italy, right? So I immediately, if I think of lemons, I think of southern Italy.
Of a location, that whole area.
Because the whole air is just lemons down there, you know. Portofino and down there below. I think of that when I think of lemons. But I have a lemon tree in my backyard, and I actually have to go get some lemons and make lemonade maybe this afternoon after talking about this aroma of lemons.
Yes.
So this is going to be something for people to really experience.
So this is something that...
It's very unique.
It's a very interesting piece.
Now, who's pairing up with who for the different piano pieces?
So we have Friday night at 7:30 at Seabury Hall, and you can check ebbandflowarts.org for more information, 876-1854. Friday night is a music for two pianos, a world premiere, two world premieres. Commissioned works that we've done. So again, culminating our work, reviving things. This is kind of a new platform we're calling the Maui Institute for Modern Music.
Ooh.
It helps to pursue these endeavors more fully in the future. And so we're commissioning and premiering two works. This one is by Sarn Oliver, again, a very familiar name to some of our audience, I'm sure, because he's been here now more than four or five times as violinist and composer. He is a member of the San Francisco Symphony First Violin Section.
Heavy duty.
Very solid.
It is a very respected position.
Absolutely, you know, it's one of the top orchestras, and his wife is a member also of the Symphony First Violin Section. So they've come, both of them. Then they've also brought other colleagues and done string quartet concerts for us. I'm sure you recall some of them. But at this time around, he's coming as a composer too. So we commissioned a work, and he calls it Dodici Tono Barolo, so which means 12 tone and a brand of wine.
A 12 tone wine.
Yeah, so.
Dodici Tono, like tone.
Barolo could be the wine.
And this was the one that you commissioned, but you didn't give it a name. He named it,
and it's for two pianos.
And the pianos aren't playing the same. They're playing in harmony or the same piece?
They're playing the same piece.
Same piece.
It's for two pianos.
Okay, well, sometimes pianos do kind of interaction.
Well, there is interaction, of course, but it's for two. It's a composition for two pianos. So, and then there's a work by Pilarin Bacos, another commissioned work. Pilarin is a native of Maui. He went to school, born and raised. Then he went to the mainland and went to some very distinguished schools, MIT and University of Chicago, studying at first engineering, but then changing his major to music. So he ended up, with degrees in composition. He's come back. He's done some work for us in the schools, and then we now commissioned him to write this piece.
Is he living here now?
Yeah, he lives here, and he will participate as pianist on Sunday.
And who's playing with him?
I'm playing the second piano part. So it's a two-piano piece he calls Prelude and Groove.
Prelude and Groove.
I love that name. Play on the Prelude and Fugue.
I love that name.
Yeah,
Prelude and Groove. Love it.
So,
what a good idea for a name, Prelude and Groove.
And it's a very well-made, very effective piece, and so we'll be doing that premiere. Then we're doing the George Walker Music for Two Pianos. George is our honorary president, first African-American to win the Pulitzer Prize in Music.
Pulitzer Prize in Music.
Yes, he's a very historic figure in music,
What's his name again?
George Walker. Lives in New Jersey. That's when I got to know him. and he's 94.
Wow.
But he's well aware of the program and what's happening, and he's still writing. He's actually still composing. And that's a piece, interestingly, that he has not had on a recording. Many of his works are on CD. This one isn't. There's no MIDI, you know, because it was written before computer technology so this is the most creative aspect of performance for me, is when there's a piece that no one has any record of, really. It's just the
it's
notes
exciting.
On the paper.
Yeah.
And Adam and I are working through it, and it had a very distinguished premiere in Carnegie Hall.
Wow.
By a very noted piano duo.
Adam's
speaking
calling
of Adam.
It. Aloha, is this Adam?
Hi, yes, this is me.
Hi, Adam, you're live on the air here on it's so glad you could call in.
Oh, me too. Thank you.
We were just talking about how exciting this show's going to be, this performance on Friday night.
Yeah.
It's going to be really exciting. we will really present a huge variety of pieces by such a wide range of composers, from kind of composers that people know about, just kind of historically for their historic importance in terms of modern music, but then also some composers we really rarely hear from, including living composers. So it's a real mixed bag, but really great, strong pieces.
Well, I have to ask you, because you know what? We're very blessed to be able to have Robert bring people like you in, and he mentioned Iggy Jang's coming over for this, and there's people who we never ever would even know about, Adam, and let alone having commissioned two pieces for this. I think sometimes we on Maui don't even know how lucky we are to have something like this. This is really putting, I think, in a way, Maui's been put on the map in the modern music classical field because of Robert and Ebb and Flow Arts.
I think you're absolutely right. It's actually, and I think I've said it before in my previous visits, that it's really kind of a rare thing for an organization to present such strong programming from such a wide variety of people, and you know, from both local here in the islands, but also over on the mainland and beyond, and all sorts of pieces and periods, of course, like within the realm of modern contemporary music, but also different ensembles, and it's actually such a banquet of programming that this island and beyond kind of gets because of Ebb and Flow Arts, and it is actually a rather rare thing. And then also, to Maui's credit, I think, we always have such strong audiences and very positive, supportive audiences who are here on the island, which is also, I have to say, a rather rare thing, too. I mean, even coming from New York City, you know, concert halls will be maybe, like, peppered with a couple people, or, you know, when it's really, you know, adventurous programming. And so here on Maui, I just find that people from all across the listening spectrum will attend these concerts with a real open mind and a real kind of curious impulse to see what's really in store. And it's just a really kind of soul fulfilling environment and experience to play. And I do think it's rather rare. And then Robert goes through real great lengths to ensure that these programs are presented for free to the public. It's also hugely rare, like totally, totally rare. And to do that while also supporting the artists who are performing, I mean, all these things are just make Ebb and Flow super special and actually unique, because, again, like in New York City, it's not like that either. We'll be like laboring for months and we'll get our cab fare. Maybe.
Yeah.
Well,
it's just a very special thing.
Well, you work in San Francisco, correct?
No, I'm based in New York City.
Oh, in New York. So, I mean, I would think this would be the center of modern music, cutting edge, things like this. This would be the cultural center in New York, wouldn't it?
It definitely is in terms of opportunities for hearing adventurous programming. But in terms of feeling supported by audiences and really feeling like ambassadors of new music, I just find that when I'm here on Maui, I just come away feeling really really gratified.
Mm.
In a way that doesn't, I mean, world-class artists, I've seen them play for virtually empty halls in New York City. And it's, it has to do with also just because there's just so much going on. But, you know, I do also just think that here people just have a more open mind. And it's just a really special thing when I tell people that I'm coming to Maui and the kind of pieces that I'm learning and the stuff we're preparing. They're really kind of excited by the idea, but they are intrigued, really. Like, how is this possible? Is this really, does this really exist?
Well, you know, part of it, Adam, is really the fact that it's been 19 years. And over 17 years. Over the course of 17 years, people have learned trust the music, the quality of the musicians, and the fact that they're getting an opportunity to see world-class musicians they'd never, ever get a chance to see.
That's a good point. If it
weren't for Ebb and Flow Arts. And so it's really a very unique situation where we're getting to see this and see it for free in beautiful surroundings like the Center Hall up there.
Totally,
you know, lovely.
Great.
Yeah. So, I mean, it is really exciting. And so when are you going to move here, Adam?
Oh, good question. I think I'm just not going to leave. That's my new strategy.
Good.
It's also really the environment itself. I think once one gets to the island, I'm talking about I'm speaking for myself, I guess. Like over the course of the time, my kind of, I'll sort of sink into the community too. And it's one of my favorite things. This is my fourth time visiting and performing through Ebb and Flow Arts. And every time I've felt kind of myself sort of sink into the community and into the spirit of the environment and the island in a way that really actually helps the music and helps this spirit of experimentation and really just going for it. And, you know, the audience and the island and all of those things really foster, I think, a very unique music-making experience where we're all really quite challenged. I mean, the music is universally difficult, you know, but it's something about just the environment and the atmosphere makes it safe, you know, kind of go for it.
Very well
said.
And
so I really look forward to these experiences.
Well, there's also the question and answer, the discussion time is 6:30 to 7:30.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's got to be interesting because a lot of people really don't know. I mean, I love music. I was raised actually with classical music until the Beatles happened, and that was a long time ago, of course. But kind of then I went over to the other side. But you know, I still love all kinds of music. So a lot of people who are going to these concerts are experiencing this kind of music for the first time. And you know, maybe they've gone to a few other Ebb and Flow Arts, you know, and I know you have a core base, Robert, of people that come. But it's really a very educational experience for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think you're right. And you know, to hear the musicians talk about it, I think also a great thing about that process of hearing about the music is that it also humanizes the performers and the process. Because I think when they see that we're all, you know, people, you know, we're not living in a laboratory either. You know, we're kind of experiencing this music and figuring it out for ourselves also. You know, we've maybe lived with it longer and we're, you know, ambassadors for the work to a certain extent. At the same time, you know, they can see that we're all sort of in this together. We're all kind of figuring it out and working it out. Like a lot of, you know, actually all of the pieces for this weekend, with the exception of the solo that I'm doing, which I only just brought back after 10 years and really never performed it in public.
We look forward to
until
that.
Until this summer, which are these Bartok pieces.
Oh, my
Bela
gosh.
Bartok, three etudes.
The Bartok etudes.
Those are very difficult pieces, aren't they?
Oh, they're crazy, yeah. They're completely off the wall. But but the really interesting thing is all this music's totally new to me, everything else.
Wow.
And I've counted it up, and there's 9 pieces that I'm doing over the next couple of days. And that's why I'm talking to you on the phone.
You get to break
He's
from
practicing
rehearsing.
With the other hand.
I'm still
that's so
to the
funny.
Piano. But, like, but, you know, I just think that that process of seeing people, seeing the performers and hearing them talk about the music, it just also just shows that they're you know, we're all kind of in it together. When I did the 50 state tour project that initially brought me in touch with Robert and Evan Flo, and I did the Hawaii concert of that 50 state tour here on Maui. Anyway, it was that experience, you know, talking to people at every one of those shows and really, like, not hiding, you know, backstage or not, you know, secluding myself or kind of putting it, but just kind of getting out there and talking to people, I found it was really effective on a completely on a musical level, like, because it ended up helping people get a little bit closer to the music. They were able to get let it in a little more because they saw the person creating it and the person translating
there's
it.
There's a connection you can make in that time.
Yeah.
Of that, and it's always an intimate atmosphere here anyway. It's not like you're playing a huge concert hall. But that intimate atmosphere is added to when you can hear the person talking and answering, and you see that they're, you know, able to explain a little bit of what's going on and their feelings behind it. Because a lot of this music is kind of mental. I mean, Bartok, I think, is you disagree?
Yeah.
You think it's emotional?
And Adam, too, I know we've discussed this as well. There's a certain piece. Of course, all, you know, the art of composition is in part an intellectual process over the years. You know, Beethoven, too, was in that sense, or whoever you want to name, you know. I mean, but we were, like, we were talking about this piece by Arthur Berger, three pieces for two pianos, written in the late 60s, or early 60s. And then I learned it as a college student, so 50 years ago, played it. It was taught to me by the first performer of the piece, a man named Gilbert Kalish, a pianist, who then recorded it with another pianist. And now I'm passing it on to Adam, in a sense. I mean, there's a skip of a generation in one. No, not really, but, you know, it's. I felt like it's almost an oral tradition, say, that you might get in Central African band music. Now, you wouldn't say Central African band music is intellectual.
No.
But there's a man who'd studied this music, transcribed it, one piece by one piece, with earphones and all, and then wrote it out. It's highly complex. I mean, the little gradations of time between each attack and things are parallel in a way to the Berger, which is extremely intricate. So on one level, yes, and the intellect is involved, but music is first an emotional endeavor, you know? I mean, our intellect serves it.
Well, it's interesting, even one piece you mentioned, the aroma of sound. I mean, again, that's senses. I mean, there's no doubt that music attacks our senses and actually seduces our senses and draws us in to places to our soul. I think it leads us to higher places because without fail, when you're really into a piece of music, you're connecting with that musician's soul. You're connecting with what they're experiencing. You begin to experience live in a live room. You feel what they're feeling, right?
Yeah,
and I think seeing these pieces performed live is a huge, huge, a really great opportunity because they require such a level of concentration, but also there's such an intensity to them that I think it's impossible not to get swept up in for a listener and a viewer to get swept into the experience, which it will inherently be an emotional experience watching kind of the sweat and the kind of breathing and counting and getting this all, making it happen. So even if the music, that's why I think seeing something live is such a special opportunity because something that on a recording might sound, maybe it sounds cerebral or maybe it sounds difficult, but actually watching it and being present in when it's being manifested from nothing is really a whole other ball game, and it becomes completely, I was just watching, I took a little video on my phone while we were recording, and it was like, it was so cool because I was able to step back and just watch what we were doing, and I thought, oh my gosh, this is like, this is going to be great. Like, it's going to be so cool.
Yeah, you're taking it's really a little adventure, a kind of a journey together that you take.
Totally.
Ensemble,
and I knew it would be like that this week.
Yeah, well, I really thank you, Adam. I know I've got to let you go back to rehearsing.
Oh, thank you.
Bar talk.
Thank you so much.
But thank you very much for calling, Adam. And look forward to seeing you. Look forward to seeing and hearing you.
Oh, great. I look forward to it as well. Thanks so much.
A big aloha.
You too.
Bye-bye. Such a sweet guy. Oh, what a nice guy he is, huh?
Really.
Really. You can feel his enthusiasm for it, right?
Oh, sure. You know, now, I mean, a man who devotes, he said the other day, he played the sonatas and interludes of Cage after 10 years he played them, and for the first time he felt comfortable. So this is someone who devotes an enormous amount of his life to this music in a way
very
special.
We do want to mention and talk about
the
second part of the weekend,
yes,
which is really exciting because it embraces five pianos and a lot of students who are part of the Maui Music Conservatory. And it's there upstairs at the Queen Kaumanu Center. And you're going to have...
Adam again.
Yeah, Adam. And it's going to be a special thing happening Saturday and Sunday.
Yes, we have some open rehearsals planned. We'd like to announce 6 to 8 p.m. on Saturday at the Maui Music Conservatory. That's the second floor on the Queen Kaumanu Center.
Back towards the Macy's Men section upstairs.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And and then on Sunday morning, starting at 11 a.m. going through to 2 p.m., we're planning an open rehearsal as well. So this is for you out there. You want to check out, as Adam was discussing, the inner workings a bit, because we're not going to be probably giving full performance renditions, like a dresser, but we'll be starting and stopping, and there may be other things that aren't mentioned even in the program so far that we'll be introducing. Someone wants to play.
Five pianos is to
okay,
get
so
them
the five pianos.
Gosh.
So the second concert, as we said, the first concert is Friday, 7:30 p.m. at Seabury Hall. The second concert is Sunday, 4 p.m. at the Maui Music Conservatory, owned by Ruth Marotta. And she, in the past, has generously given her a space for our multi-piano events. Now, there are more pianos per square foot in the Maui Music Conservatory than anywhere else on Maui, by far. They're often over a dozen. So we'll be able to use five.
They'll just set
them.
People chairs up around.
Yeah,
the
yeah. We yeah, fit. Yeah. We managed to fit. I mean, it's a very popular event in that sense.
And who's playing the five pianos?
So we have Adam is playing. I'm going to be one of them. Pelaren, Bacos, Joan Forsythe, and Marty Cluth, who's a resident of Kihei and has her music school and is experienced with the modern music. So the five of us. It's a very interesting piece by Morton Feldman, the composer maybe many haven't heard about, but he's an American composer. I'm trying to remember, 1926 to 1987, so 60, 61-year-old. Fascinating approach, totally unique in American music, what he did. He had to be entirely intuitive the whole time. So talking about not intellectual. Yet, if you listen to his interviews, which I have, they're on YouTube from the 60s and so, extremely intellectual person, you know, and very knowledgeable. The painters of the day, very influenced, the writers of the day and all that. But very interesting, funny man. And so this piece asks each performer to play a part that entirely independently of the other.
Wow. Challenging.
So,
challenging.
And he demands, as he did in most of his music, that we play very quietly the whole time.
Really?
A lot of his sounds, he was totally into sound. And he was of that school, the Cage School. Earl Brown was part of that. And in addition, we're going to play a piece by Earl Brown for three pianos.
And Earl Brown?
Earl Brown is a composer also from roughly the same time. I don't know his exact date, but he was a close colleague of Morton Feldman and John Cage into sound. And this piece is wild. There's no traditional, well, there is some traditional, but for the most part, it's a kind of free-for-all, but structured, where a lot of the work of the pianist is inside. So there'll be a lot of plucks going on. And
inside?
Inside the piano.
Inside?
Plucked.
Are people actually?
No, they don't, actually.
Okay.
That was apparently the case with Henry Cowell when he did his Banshee many years ago. He apparently climbed in all fours.
He climbed in the piano.
Yeah.
And he's lucky the top didn't come down on him.
The story is that the next day the performance was reported in the sports page of the French newspaper.
That's really funny.
But I'm an old guy, so I'm going to sit and...
Yes.
Just work on it. But yeah, no, it's now this is from the 60s, a piece, mm-hmm. and it's what you'd say graphic notation, mix, some traditional, but Feldman also did this graphic, there were no notes or anything, just maybe like charts.
Really?
You know, graph charts. And then Feldman, in this piece, Five Pianos, uses a kind of standard notation. He also asked that the pianist hum.
Okay, that's really taking it.
Again, quietly, but yeah, and it's not
hum along with the.
Well, it's not as straightforward as one would hope. It's that, for example, you the pianist plays a high C and a low D flat and has to hum a D natural in the mid,
no.
That kind of thing. Yeah.
Oh my
so
god.
So it takes some work.
Oh yeah.
And it goes and it can last up to 30 minutes. I think our version will be more like 25. Peter Swanzy, our technical producer and videographer, is creating a visual environment for us for that piece.
Nice.
There will be solos. Again, Iggy Jang will solo. Saran Oliver has said he'll solo violin. They may join forces for a duo, actually. That'd be wonderful.
Wow.
And then Adam will play the Bartok. Joan will play a solo.
I'm going to come to this one.
Yeah.
I'm definitely going to be there. Yeah. No, really.
And come early, by the way.
Really?
All of you, listen. Okay. There's no pre-concert. There's the open rehearsal from 11 to 2.
But you should be there seated.
And then the other excellent part is Bill Anderson will be here, the guitarist and composer. We commissioned a work from him, and he wrote a short new guitar piece that I think he's going to perform. In addition, he's performing a solo guitar piece by the Mexican composer Emil Awad. Now, we know Emil, we've been to his festival over the last couple of years. He won't be with us, but Bill plays this piece. And then he and Joan, his wife, do duos for guitar and piano, one by Charles Warrenen, which is a piece they recorded. And they've done it for many years now, and it's really a superb performance they do.
You're going to do all this in 2 hours?
This will be a long concert.
Oh, okay. So how long?
There will be an intermission.
Oh. How long is it?
Well, I think 2 hours probably.
Oh, 2 hours,
Something like that. And then they're doing a piece of mine, which I'm very happy. I wrote for them.
Which piece?
Some years. It's called Romance Fantasy. They're husband and wife, so there was a little bit of that personal aspect, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard them, they've played it now several times already back east, and I heard them one of the first performances, and now it's looking forward to that. So that will be it. And we'll finish with Corroboree, I think it's called Corroboree.
Corroboree,
I believe, is the Earl Brown pronunciation.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, again, for three pianos that involve inside the piano work, many clusters. I'm planning to use a special cluster bar that I made for a production some years ago that actually covers 40 keys in one swipe.
You're amazing, Robert. Well, I'm expecting someone to call in soon, so I want to recap.
Yes.
Friday night, 6:30 discussion, Seabury Hall, 7:30, the wonderful show up there. And then Sunday, afternoon at 4 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
This amazing five piano and more collection happening at the Queen Commerce Center. This is all free, folks.
All free. And by the way, Friday night also works by Stravinsky.
Oh,
and
really?
Copland, yes.
Oh, well, Copland's always a hit,
the
right?
The El Salon Mexico of Copland, a two piano version by Leonard Bernstein. Beautiful arrangement.
I love
and a wonderful
Leonard
piece.
Who's
and
doing,
of course,
who's
they collaborate.
That one?
That's Adam and Joan.
Wow.
And then Adam and Joan will play Igor Stravinsky's Concerto for Two Pianos. This apparently was Stravinsky's favorite chamber work.
Really?
It's a remarkable piece. I think it's the gold standard of two piano music. It's just a great, wonderful piece. And so that we're very excited that that's happening. It's just one of the sort of a central classic of two piano music.
I only know a little bit of Stravinsky, really. And mm-hmm. I had, you know, I guess, was it the Firebird Suite in
yes,
the spring?
The early. This is from the middle. He had three periods. And that was the early period, the Rite of Spring.
Mm-hmm.
Then he kind of... Yeah, how should I say? He shook up his following in a way because he went back to Bach.
Oh, did he really?
He surprised everyone. He got rather conservative in a certain way, to the offense of some in the music. They formed the kind of rivalries. Those who went with Schoenberg into the much more avant-garde, but Stravinsky held back a bit.
Huh.
And they call it back to Bach, neoclassical. This concerto for two pianos is in that time, mid-1930s. But for me, and having studied the piece myself and played it, there's nothing, I don't know, conservative. It's a very amazing composition, regardless of whether you think it's retrograde or, you know, for avant-garde. It's just a wonderful piece of music, and it's written, it was made for a special piano that they combined the two bodies of the instrument, one on top of the other.
Oh my gosh.
So it was this huge
double-decker
piano. And Stravinsky and his son, Salima, played this piece a lot in the day, you know.
Wow. Yeah. I think Stravinsky had a pretty wild life, too.
Yeah, I think... Hollywood. He ended up in Hollywood, and then there was a third period of his career that no one ever hears.
What's that?
That he went to 12-tone at that point.
Really?
In his 70s, he started writing the wildest music he ever wrote in his life.
Wow!
And they're wonderful pieces, but you know, again, who plays it? Nobody.
Well, 12-tone's not easy to play.
It's not, and it's not an audience, please. You know, let's face it.
Right.
But Feldman makes the point that the art of composition and the pleasing of the audience often go in divergent paths.
Well, yes, but yes and no. It's like, okay, I mean, I don't like abstract art that much, but there's some abstract art pieces, and I know you like Tony Walham. I love Tony Walham's, you know. And there's some pieces I absolutely adore that... But, you know, it really depends, again, if you're in tune, if you vibe with where the person's coming from. And it is hard. For me, I have to say, I don't necessarily feel that 12-tone is something I can easily digest.
Well, it depends, too. I mean, Aaron Copland wrote a 12-tone piece, and you still hear it's Copland. Mm-hmm. And with the Stravinsky, you still hear it's Stravinsky.
Yeah.
The technique doesn't take over.
No.
But it's a tool. However, art of composition... needs to be tended to by the composer, obviously. And that sometimes means they must go one in a certain direction that's preordained by what they've already written, he or she, or what the demands of that historic intellectual and emotional mass of composition.
Well, you come down to, they're not writing these pieces to get played on the radio. They're not really doing
it.
They're not doing it to make money.
Exactly.
And so they're doing it
really purely. It's a vocation.
Yes, purely because it's something that they need to express. And
you
take it out of the realm of like, okay, this isn't going to be recognized in the masses at all. You know, it's not going to be something that you hear on the radio, and it's not going to probably get any awards. You know, and you take it out of that, then interesting things do happen. But then again, it's like, okay, so you're just really doing it for yourself then at that point, right? I mean, possible?
No, you're doing for the art of composition.
For the art of composition, okay.
Really, to further that. And that's what Adam was saying. Here on Maui, we have an audience clearly understands that.
Yeah.
And the performers we're assembling, and this is the first time we've convened so many of our veteran performers in one place, one time on Maui, which makes it quite exciting for us. They know this. They've devoted large parts of their life to music mm-hmm. that was fulfilling the stream of art of composition mm-hmm. and not
And they can recognize that art of the composer.
Yeah, that's right.
And then there's the interpretation of it on top of that.
That's right, exactly.
How clearly can you, and are you even meant to interpret it as the composer interpreted? Are you supposed to only play it as the composer wrote it, or can you use, I mean, when you're writing a piece for your intuition and from your intuition, you have to let your intuition guide you to a degree, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, how
you can't. The trap. But, you know, Feldman wrote an article sort of notoriously said, it was titled, "If you need an audience, we don't need you." He was a very funny man. He was a New York resident, a Russian Jew. He worked for his family in a clothing manufacturer.
You need an audience. And well, that does put it in another whole realm, doesn't it? It's kind of interesting.
It was very down to earth. One of the interviews, he said, "Well, what is process? It's how the hell to get out of here."
How the hell do you get out of here?
What is process?
It's a good point. Yeah. How the hell do you get out of here? Well, that's life. That kind of covers life, you know?
Like process do you find the door? Composition.
Where's the door? How do I get out of here?
Yeah.
I'm in process. I can't find the door yet. The door's somewhere out there, but I'm still in process. I haven't been able to find the door because I'm not ready to find the door.
That's right.
No, it's you know what, you understand it so well, Robert, that you're able to understand what can work and what will work and what is kind of pushing the limits and who can even do it, you know, which is a gift. You know, again, I go back to this is quite an amazing gift, because when you can get to that point going, you know what, I can commission this piece and I can have this person write it, and I can get it played here, and people will come, and they will hear it, you know. So it's not like, what's his name said? It's
Adam.
Not Adam. Well, no, I know. Not Adam. The guy that said, we don't care if you need an audience.
Warren Feldman,
who I think I would have liked this guy.
Yeah.
He's the one that got the Pulitzer Prize?
No, but he's the one that wrote Five Pianos and was totally into sound and intuition.
I like that guy, and it's
very interesting music. Talk about the range of things that Adam mentioned, you know, from the Feldman to the this work by Arthur Berger, which is incredibly intricate, down to tenths of 1 second, you know, less than a tenth of a second in terms of coordination.
I'm trying to think that.
But that's what we tend to forget, that music works in subdivisions of seconds. I mean, 16th notes at 120, march,
but you can't even separate them when they're that close.
But that's a half a second. That's a half a second.
Yeah.
So we're always working in subdivisions down. But the Berger is extremely intricate. And
are you composing? You're not conducting it. This is all done on their own. Are you conducting any of this stuff? This is all done with two
pianos.
Okay.
We various techniques for coordinating. You know. One that I wasn't familiar with till coming to Hawaii, but Adam, is a short breath. Maybe you're familiar, you know.
No.
Before a downbeat or something like that.
Well, I know in yoga what a short breath is, but I don't know in piano playing what short breath is.
Yeah, it's probably good for one's health, too. It's like a breath of fire, I don't know.
And it's like... You know, but there is actually a term called a short breath.
Well, I don't know what it's called, but it's musicians do that a lot. If you listen closely to a chamber concert sometime, you'll hear one or the other doing a short to give a cue.
Oh, is that how you give cues?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So if it's not someone about to sneeze.
No.
It's actually a cue that you give by doing a short breath.
That's right.
Well, see, I learned something new.
Yeah.
I never would have guessed that. So that's the cue to have them watch that something's coming in or changing.
Yeah,
it's right before
their entrance, let's say, you know.
And they'll be listening for that short breath.
Yeah.
And that's on mic so they can hear it good.
You know, I'm trying to remember what I've heard it on CD recordings and everything.
Wow. It's interesting.
But it's a very often used technique for coordinating ensemble.
Your piece that you wrote,
yeah,
we'll be hearing on Sunday.
Yeah.
And it's nice that it's going to be done by this husband-wife duo because it's a romantic. How does romantic and modern music go hand in hand in less than 2 minutes?
Okay. Well, again, music is first an emotional process.
Mm-hmm.
It always has been, always will be. So that's the most ready aspect of music. And if I wanted, as I did want it, to write lyrically and gently and so, it's entirely possible to do so, you know.
But it doesn't have to follow a melodic line necessarily.
It depends what, you know, what we call melody, but it doesn't have to be a familiar
melody,
or it doesn't have to be totally tonal and free of dissonance and all of that. No, but it's first an emotional process. And
you can feel it if you come.
Yeah, that's right.
This Friday. Come and learn, get there early, get there at 6:30 so you can do the discussion, get your seats and everything.
Yeah.
And then the show starts at 7:30. And definitely it will be fun if you're down around the Queen Kamana Center. And I should mention this because we were going to get a call from Tony, but I didn't see her calling in.
Mm-hmm.
But they're doing a back-to-school thing this weekend. If you're down there, you can actually do a donation for backpacks for some of the kids in need. Or you can even come on Saturday. You know, during the time you're doing your thing down there and rehearsing from 11 to 1, they're going to have a fashion show. And if you're down there, you're one of the first 200 people down there, you'll get a discount coupon from Jamba Juice. And there'll be cakey crafts and door prizes happening, too. So if you are down there Saturday from 11 to 1, check that out. And also then head on up to the second floor. You can hear the rehearsals. And
So on Sunday at 4 p.m. at the Maui Music Conservatory.
That is the five pianos and your piece there, Robert.
Yes, well,
and some interesting other things happening as well.
Very interesting program. Very wide range.
And it's probably going to be something like you've never seen before.
It's very rare to hear this piece, for example, five pianos. When do you? It's recorded, as Adam says, but to hear it live, no.
Yeah.
And corroborated by Brown, and as well as most of the music that we present. So, ebbandflowarts.org is where you can find out more, 876-1854. We have a Facebook page, too, so you can check that out.
Well, I really appreciate your wealth of knowledge and the fact that, again, we didn't mention, these are free, no charge, folks. You don't pay a dime. Donations are accepted, and I know sometimes people, I heard... your last one you did up at the EL was amazing, and it sold out, and some people even donated a little bit because they thought it was so great to be able to see the 3D and then hear the jazz music, and what a great combination to put together where people get to see Tom Vendetti's preview of his film and then hear the jazz and all. That was wonderful. So, Zag, donations are accepted, and I'm sure gratefully accepted.
Absolutely,
But otherwise, no charge. And thank you for people that do go above and beyond that and give back.
Yeah, when we have good private contributions in addition to the door at the door, but we have our board members who contribute and others.
Thank you to them.
Yeah, yes.
And all the people and your
Absolutely.
Wife who always works so supporting.
She's
always there working.
She's
always there working at everyone. So I want to thank you, Robert, for your time. And we'll be checking in with you on Thursday at noon and doing another show about this.
Or is it 11?
11.
Okay,
11.
Good.
Thank
all
you.
Right, 11. We'll continue. Thank
you. We're going to be going to the Democratic Convention where history's been made today and will continue to be made. And I want to thank each and every one of you for listening to Talk Story here on KAOI.